and take up the next item. So that is 467.
467, council to convene as Portland Development Commission Budget Committee to receive the proposed budget.
Okay, I'm now convening the Portland Development Commission Budget Committee for purpose of receiving the budget message. Budget Committee members have received copies of this budget on Monday, May 11th, and request that Gina call the roll of the Budget Committee.
Here.
I'm sorry, Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Absent. Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here.
Carla, has there been a change in order?
It's because of the Budget Committee.
Okay.
Okay. All right, then let me introduce Patrick Quinton and Chair Kelly to transmit the budget message. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, I'm Tom Kelly, the Chair of the Portland Development Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to present PDC's proposed budget for fiscal year 2015-16. Last week, we presented our new five-year strategic plan and highlighted our focus on addressing the disparities in income and opportunity within the city. As promised, the budget before you is intended to deliver on this on the first year of our new plan. This budget, with $213 million in forecasted expenditures, supports the agency's aggressive efforts to promote healthy, complete neighborhoods, access to high-quality employment, equitable wealth creation opportunities, expanded civic networks and partnerships, and a more equitable, innovative, and financially sustainable PDC. In addition to its alignment with our new five-year strategic plan, the priorities of this proposed budget were established by the PDC board and its at his board retreat last December, and informed by the Central City and Neighborhood Budget Advisory Committees. Lastly, the budget and five-year forecast also reflect changes resulting from the six urban renewal area amendments. While immediate impacts to fiscal year 15-16 budget are minimal, the budget does reflect the near-term project priorities identified for the River District, North McAdam, and Central East Side URAs. With that, I will turn it this over to Patrick.
You. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. I'm also joined by Tony Barnes here, who's our budget officer, and so I'll walk through the budget. Our budget, obviously, is a fairly extensive budget. This is the presentation tries to kind of cover all the highlights, but there's certainly we can get into whatever detail you want, and Tony here is probably going to be the best person to get into detail, so he's up here to answer any questions. We present this to you today, and then we come back together again in 2 weeks to vote. So any questions and comments you have here today, if we can't answer them, we have time to get back to you. As our chair mentioned, this budget is the first budget that you'll see that begins to implement our new strategic plan. So we it's broken down into funds as required by law, but I'll present it according to the structure of the new strategic plan so you can see how our expenditures break down. Once again, as Chair Kelly mentioned, we are implementing also the budget impacts of the new urban renewal area amendments. So we'll see that when we get to those urban renewal area sections of the presentation. I'll point those out. Equally important is that we're also this continues to fund the obligations and commitments that we've made as part of our Lentz and Old Town Chinatown action plans, and it's the first step towards a gateway action plan as well. And as is typically the case with our budgets, we have projects that carry over from year to year. Sometimes the timing of projects is hard to predict. Some projects carry on for many years, but what you'll see here is a number of the big ticket items that were in last year's budget have been carried forward into this upcoming year's budget. And obviously our hope is always to bring these projects to fruition. And some of these on the list, like our Daimler loan, will definitely pay out over the next year. We would hope to have some of the other items on this, like our investments in the Central East Side, happen in 15-16 as well. Just as a reminder, because over the past few months we've talked a lot about spending priorities in various urban renewal areas. And so this budget reflects a lot of those changes. With the River District, downtown waterfront, there's been a reduction in overall tax increment available to us. We still are able to reach maximum indebtedness in the River District, but it's on a very far more prescribed timeline. And so the priorities, both in River District and the remaining funds in downtown waterfront, are really focused on a few priorities. Old Town Chinatown Action Plan is obviously at the top of the list, but we also are beginning to make progress on things like Centennial Mills and the post office. So you see those line items are more fully funded than they have been in the past. I've already mentioned the Lentz Action Plan. You'll see in the Lentz Urban Renewal Area that is more fully funded than in the past. Same is true of the Central East Side. Interstate is relatively unchanged from a budget perspective. You will see the affordable housing dollars that were moved forward as part of our discussion last year. But on the ground, we are beginning progress on projects like the MLK Alberta project. And then, obviously, we have the elimination of budget for the Waiura, the Willamette Industrial Urban Renewal Area, as well as the Education Urban Renewal Area, which was closed down as a result of the budget amendments. So here is our, when we walk through the budget at a high level, we talk about resources and we talk about expenditures. Resources and expenditures don't match because the resources we have on hand oftentimes exceed what we have forecasted for expenditures, and so you'll see that as well. We have just under $300 million in total resources available to us in the coming fiscal year. What this chart shows you is that the bulk of these resources actually are on hand. They come from debt proceeds of bonds that have already been issued. That's the big blue part of the pie chart here. About $180 million is money that's on hand. We can talk about that if you want. It's a dynamic that's been growing over the past few years as projects have not moved forward as quickly as we've hoped, but we've had the proceeds to move forward on those, and so they remain on hand. And then the other big part of our current resource base is what we call short-term debt. That really means that it's pay-as-you-go. So we don't have to. This is what we expect to receive during the upcoming fiscal year, and it's available for us to spend. And we don't have to, like I said, issue long-term debt. The long-term debt piece is just below that. It's about 7% of our resource base. So right now we're in this fortunate position that we really don't have to rely on any new debt, long-term debt, in order to cover the budget that we're proposing here. I would hope and expect over the next few years that we would begin to spend down this balance and then begin to have to borrow again. But that's really the position that we find ourselves in. On the proposed budget side, as I mentioned, our proposed budget is about $213 million in proposed expenditures, so that's obviously leaves a difference that we have in contingency, which is money that will roll over into future year budgets. If for some reason we have a need for additional expenditures beyond the 213, then we have that money to draw on if we need to. Very high level categories in front of you, the slides that come after this will break it down according to the categories in our strategic plan. But you see, still about half of the money that we have on hand that we propose to spend in the coming fiscal year is in the broad category of property redevelopment. When we get into the more detail, you'll see that's the bulk of that sits in a handful of projects. So it's both in specific projects like the remaining dollars that were going to the county health building and things like that, but it's also in line items around commercial property redevelopment. So the Old Town Chinatown Action Plan is largely budgeted through opportunity funds that we can put into specific projects. We're putting money into something like the Society Hotel or the Casket Building in Old Town. These are $6 million expenditures or, you know, numbers like that. Those add up to a fairly decent amount in our property redevelopment category. The other big category, obviously, is our set aside to housing. There's a chart that will walk through the set aside that you've seen now for the past few years. The percentage reflects the amount of our total budget, so it's not just TIF. So the number is below 30% for that reason. It's also below because we spend more and less in certain years, and so it's not. So every year, it's not going to be the set aside won't be 30%. It's actually reflects the cumulative percentage of housing investments. So this is the housing set aside table that I referenced. We've been showing you this now for a few years. It's a difficult slide to absorb in one sitting. Just a few things to point out. It's a cumulative number, the percentages. So when you look on the right-hand column, if you say, how are we tracking in terms of our set-aside and where are we ending up, you can see that in the 15-16 column, the third column there, that's where we'll be as a result of our expenditures in affordable housing in the coming fiscal year. On the far right is where we're tracking. So you can see that, for example, in the River District through next year, we'll be at 40%. By the end of this forecast, we'll be at 32%. That's largely a result of expenditures that occurred in prior years that bumped the number up over 30%. In Interstate, we're moving from 36% in this coming fiscal year up to 42% as a result of our $20 million additional commitment. So that's how it all kind of works out. I'm happy to pause if people want to ask any questions about this. The last thing I'll say on this chart is at the bottom, you can see the cumulative percentage, which at the end of next fiscal year will be about 36%, and it will trend down a little bit over the next 5 years, but still be about 34% above the overall city target.
So I do have a question about the North McAdam set aside. Mm-hmm. The council's policy is 36% per the ordinance passed in 2011. Why does it reference 42% after a URA amendment?
This is the result of the conversations that happened as part of that that talked about the additional set aside after 5 years. But the Tony, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. The 5-year forecast does not include any of the additional. Does it include any additional set aside amount above the 30?
It
well, I'm
does
just looking
start
at the 51%.
It does. It's
over the
been last year. Yeah.
Right.
So for the forecast for 16-17, it says 51%.
Right. It's above the set aside target right now, and over the life of the district, it'll average out to 42%.
As you spend money on other things, right?
Right.
But once again, this is what right. we're looking at here, and I know that there's desire for a future conversation on this. The requested budget is the 15-16 budget. That's what's in front of you. The forecast is simply that it's a forecast, so it doesn't get approved. It just gives people a look ahead. When we get to North McAdam, what I would emphasize is we have the initial dollars in 15-16, and then the next big payment in 16-17 that get us to the $19 million to get parcel 3 done. That's the near term amount, and then looking out is when we. Is, you know, it's really the next 5 to 8 years where we have the remainder of the dollars to think about. So as I mentioned, when you take our budget and now restructure it according to the new strategic plan, and I just want to, just as a caveat, just say this is the first year we're doing this. This is the first budget that we're presenting in this format. So we obviously do have a very heavily weighted budget allocation towards the first objective into the plan, but you can see that when you create an objective around healthy, complete neighborhoods, and you pull in all the work that we do, whether it's downtown or near downtown or in East Portland, it all falls into this big category now of healthy, complete neighborhoods. You can look at that in a positive way as that's exactly what we're about, and that's fundamentally what we should be spending our money on. Or you can say this is too much money going to one objective. I think part of this is just to get us thinking about it in this way, and we can think definitionally about how we want to allocate the money. But as we currently spend our money now, and as we currently define the objective, all the redevelopment money, all the commercial corridor work, that all goes into this category. I can show you in the next slide. I think I have it. A few slides up, I can break that down into more detail. But that's how this gets broken out now. Sorry,
Patrick. On this slide, Where do you book the general fund support you receive for neighborhood economic development? Which of these categories does that fall within?
So it's in a combination of the equitable wealth creation. I think some of it goes into the access to high-quality employment, and then the remainder of it goes into 21st century networks. So the general fund work is not in the big green pie.
That's all tax increment.
Yeah.
So I just you know, this is stuff we're seeing for the first time, and you're trying to create new categories to fit the strategic objectives. My initial reaction to this slide is I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, so let me go.
So if this slide is intended to tell the public something about our new mission, I have no idea what it says.
Let me go to the next few slides, if you don't mind, and because we do have some tables to walk through this. So if you break each of these, so if you dig into each of these categories, and the numbers are still big, this walks through the five objectives. So the number that you had for health and complete neighborhoods, about $114 million. You can see that it's almost exclusively tax increment, and it's roughly split between what we refer to as regional assets, but the big projects that I mentioned early on, Centennial Mills, Convention Center Hotel, Post Office, Union Station, those are big dollar amounts. And then the work we do throughout our different neighborhood projects, so you can see they're listed, there are commercial loans, all the grants we make, the storefront grants, the pre-development grants, as well as all the transportation, the infrastructure investments that we make. So that's how that breaks down. Like I said, almost entirely tax increment funded. So the $1 million, is that the federal money in the Union Station? Is that what's in that category on that one, Tony?
It's related to the contract placeholder.
Yeah, okay. So I think that's just non-TIF, but I think it's other public money. Next category down, you can see much smaller, the access to high-quality employment. You see a more even breakdown between TIF investments, non-TIF. The non-TIF, a lot of this is where the economic development, traded sector economic development, general fund money goes. It also reflects some of the EOI money we get. That's federal money as well. But more of an even split there between TIF and non-TIF. And you can see the split between the work that we do, working directly with the business community, more traded sector job growth, as well as the work we do around workforce development and helping connect people to the jobs in the traded sector companies that we're working with. Third category, wealth creation within communities of color. This one is a combination of the entrepreneurship work that we do that's largely general fund supported, as well as the small business development services that we provide, general fund supported. This would be where you would see the venture portent money that flows through us as a result of general fund, and then the TIF funded loans that we make for businesses in our urban renewal areas. That's how we get to that number there. The fourth objective, 21st century civic networks partnerships, as we've talked about in discussions around a strategic plan, this is once again somewhat of a new objective for us. And so from a funding perspective, there isn't a lot of money flowing into this at this point in time. I think some of that's it'll come as a result of initiatives that we undertake through this. But most of the money that you've seen here is our MPI work. We believe this is fundamentally about creating community capacity so that we have partners at the neighborhood level who can develop the district plans and implement on the neighborhood level. And long term, that's what we're really building through this program. So that would be, in my mind, the first of a series of initiatives that would come out of this part of the strategic plan, and money would follow as well. And the last category really relates to the operations of PDC. Some of this is just the pure staffing, overhead, administrative operations, but there's also a fair amount in here around property management of our assets, of our loan portfolio, which you know, carries a fair amount of expense associated with it as well, but also generates return for us as well. So that's the high level here. The last slide on this section is in that big 71% category, healthy, complete neighborhoods. This is another way to look at it, which is here's how we're spending that money in that big part of the pie chart. Once again, $113 million is what we're talking about. You can see the breakdown by program, so very, very little spent on administration and business development. The bulk of the dollars are in property redevelopment, whether it's direct investments in redevelopment or loans and grants made to promote redevelopment projects, and then all the work that the investments that we make in public infrastructure, parks, public facilities, and transportation. That's how that we get to that number. And then on the other side, you can see the breakdown. We call it by fund, but it also is by geography, except for the bottom two funds. So you can see where the dollars within this budget category reside. The bulk of them are in obviously River District, and then the Convention Center. Convention Center primarily because we still have the $20 million sitting in our budget, originally targeted to the renovation of the Coliseum, and then we have money targeted for the Convention Center Hotel. So these two budget those two URAs have the bulk of the dollars, but you can see the Gateway Interstate Lens also carry a fair amount of this budget as well.
So next year when you do this, I'd like to see housing included as a part of healthy neighborhoods, because I think that's a really interesting graphic that you just showed us, and to me, having affordable housing in neighborhoods is part of a healthy neighborhood.
Yeah.
So that would be, if you could just add that.
Sure. We can do the on the left side, on the right side, because we don't know exactly where the dollars will flow in the coming fiscal year on the housing side. We can certainly include it as on the programmatic side of it.
Yeah, so, that's what I was saying.
Yeah. Commissioner Fish, I just want to stop there. Does that help to provide that more?
Yeah, my only suggestion is as you fine tune the alignment with strategic plan.
Yep.
I have a basic rule of thumb is if there's like three or more commas in a descriptor,
right,
you lose me.
Right.
And I think it's just easier to follow neighborhoods, PD, operations, other things.
Yep.
Than to load it up with all the values based adjectives.
Right.
It's hard to figure out what we're talking about.
Okay. So
I have a further clarification question. How much is the total general fund that you get?
I have a slide at the end of this. We can just to remind you where we're at on that. So what I want to do is then now walk through with one slide for each urban renewal area, just to kind of remind people of the key priorities and the dollar amounts, where we are in terms of maximum indebtedness. So River District, as I've mentioned, Old Town Chinatown Action Plan remains the largest priority within the River District in the coming year. That's gonna be through a lot of smaller projects, relatively smaller projects, and so we're already moving forward on that. But then River District also carries the large signature projects, and so we do have Centennial Mills that we're moving forward on, Union Station, which we continue to make investments, and then the post office, which may not have significant expenditures in the coming fiscal year, but we probably will have far more clarity on how we're proceeding during this fiscal year. You can see, so that as a result, the River District expenditures are largely focused on property redevelopment, and then we have the housing set aside is about $15 million out of River District. I won't go through all the details on the current state of the River District, but as you know, we shrunk the River District, still have the opportunity to reach maximum indebtedness. So you can see we're about $165 million away from reaching maximum indebtedness, and we have until 2021 to reach that. Next one is Downtown Waterfront. Downtown Waterfront is a closed district, meaning we've passed the last day to issue debt. We continue to have dollars in Downtown Waterfront that either haven't been spent or recycle. So the total amount that you see in this fiscal year, coming fiscal year, which is roughly $8 million, is a result of that. And because we have properties that we have purchased in Downtown Waterfront, as we dispose of those properties and the real estate market improves, we actually do get substantial value back. So 3rd and Taylor there's a property that we recently sold. If there's be a hotel developed, that's money that flows back into downtown waterfront so that we can reinvest in our projects. Right now, once again, the like River District, the main priorities for the money we have in downtown waterfront is to support the Old Town Chinatown action plan. The two districts kind of gerrymander themselves to cover the entire geography, so the money that goes into this action plan will come from one of those two districts. And as I mentioned, we've reached maximum debt on this a long time ago, so this is one where we're slowly paying off the debt. Convention Center, once again, a closed district. We issued last bonds in 2013. That cash is part of the cash balance that I showed you at the beginning. We have two major line items in our budget there. One is the $20+ million that we have. In this budget, we've actually moved it from a Coliseum-only line item to more of a Rose Quarter redevelopment line item. It doesn't in any way change the availability of money, but we wanted to just kind of open up the conversation about what would happen with that money. And then we also have the $4 million that is targeted to the contribution to the Convention Center Hotel in this district. And then there's remaining set aside here of what's the total left set aside? Is it more than $11.5 million, or is it
about 12 remaining percent?
So it's about $12 million total left in the end through the end of the district for set aside. And so I know, so housing I think may have one or two projects left to complete in the Convention Center district.
Patrick, as we know, the Convention Center Hotel has been tied up in some litigation.
Yeah.
There's been some recent press reports of apparently some negotiations between the plaintiff and Metro to put an end to that litigation. I assume whatever I've been reading is inaccurate or incomplete, but the question I have for you is, are any of the dollars that we've allocated for this project being discussed as part of any settlement of that lawsuit, or is our money completely outside of that discussion?
Our money is completely outside of the conversation. Certainly when there's a conversation about properties that may be available for any kind of, you know, negotiation, people reference our property since we still own three or four of the major properties at that intersection. But our priorities are very clear with those properties. They all have substantial value. We expect to get full value for those properties, and we expect to see development on those properties. So we're willing to talk with any party who wants to negotiate with us on those terms. And if it happens that the plaintiff has those interests, then there could be a conversation. But beyond that, you know, our properties have value, and we expect to see outcomes on there that fit our strategic plan. So. Central East Side, we had a lot of conversations about Central East Side as part of the urban renewal area amendments. So we don't need to rehash all those. The longer term priorities are listed here. The redevelopment along the light rail line, particularly the Clinton Triangle, is a priority. In the near term, the dollars that we have relate more toward our proposed purchase of the ODOT blocks, which is moving along at a very deliberate pace with ODOT, but we expect to be able to complete that transaction. So the dollars we have would allow us to acquire those properties and then put those properties back out for redevelopment. We would hope that would end up with a complete recycling of those dollars so that we have them for other purposes in the district, or an investment that helps further redevelopment on the site. Longer term, we would have the resources in the expanded district to support redevelopment in the Clinton Triangle. We obviously have a lot of activity in the Central East Side, a lot of business activity. There's a lot of small scale redevelopment activity. We don't have significant dollars to invest in those projects, but where we can, we do put small amounts to work, whether it be through storefront grants, those kind of things, pre-development grants, or small-scale business loans. But for the most part, this district, the business activity in this district happens on its own, and that's I think as a result of a lot of public investments over many, many years. North McAdam, as we talked about earlier, and we've talked about a lot over the past few months, the budget for North McAdam, if you look out the next 5 years, has pretty much been spoken for through all of our conversations with our partners, whether it be our affordable housing partners with Zidel, with PSU and OHSU. So what you see in the near term in North McAdam budget is the money being set aside for the Parcel 3 project that we discussed, the affordable housing project, money being set aside for the construction of Bond, and money beginning to be set aside for the completion of the Greenway. Those really are the near-term priorities for the district, in addition to our initial investment in a project alongside PSU as well. There's a $2 million in, see, this fiscal year, next fiscal year, but that's really the kind of universe of investments we're talking about. We have a little bit of money, an opportunity fund line item, in the event that projects come along that need our support. That most likely would be on the Zidel property, but it could be elsewhere in the district. On Interstate. Obviously there's a lot happening in North and Northeast Portland. A lot of investment activity happening. We view the role of our dollars and our investments to help achieve the objectives that we've laid out in a strategic plan that our community stakeholders have. So we're trying to be very strategic. Activity that's happening on its own that the market is driving, we're trying to basically stay out of those transactions, not encourage further speculation or appreciation of property values, and we're trying to work directly on commercial corridors, making investments that benefit local businesses, working with locally owned businesses, longtime property owners, and then some of the more strategic work is long corridors that we do think need some additional investment and help. So you may have seen that we're now ramping up conversations with stakeholders along Lombard about how we can turn Lombard into a more kind of integrated commercial corridor, but have it happen in a way that, once again, that supports the existing businesses and residents along that corridor. As I mentioned, we still have a significant amount of our loan to our $8 million loan to Daimler to disperse. So I'm assuming that will happen in this fiscal year. So I think what's fascinating about Interstate is if you look at the bar chart here, you have this nice distribution of investments, and I think that really does reflect our ability to invest across a lot of different priority areas, and it's not simply focused on property redevelopment. There's a fair amount that goes into infrastructure, to working with the small business community, and we also obviously have a significant commitment to affordable housing in Interstate. Lenstown Center, if you take the requested budget that we sent you in February and now look at the proposed budget, what you'll see is an increase of about $20 million over the next 5 years in our commercial property redevelopment line items. So I think it goes from 15 from February now to about 35 over the next 5 years. That's a reflection of as we completed the RFI for our properties in Lenstown Center, and we've selected the partners we're going to work with, and we work through their pro formas. We've now seen what it's going to take to move all these projects along, and so it's not $35 million total, but it is a significant investment on our part, as well as the Portland Housing Bureau is also going to make a significant investment, so we're accelerating dollars there as well. But we have the resources to do it. And it is the main priority in Lentz, and so you know it's exciting to be able to think about putting that amount of money to work in Lentz Town Center. We do have some other projects in Lentz around. You can see the streetscape projects and other sidewalk and safety improvement projects. On Gateway, Gateway is unlike Lentz and Interstate. It actually is fairly resource constrained, so. The total amount you see in this fiscal year is about $6 million, maybe $7 million. you can see the priorities that we have there. So we're making investment in the park that Parks Bureau is developing. We have about $3 million set aside for up to $3 million for the development of the site that we have adjacent to the park, and we're reviewing proposals on that. So those two projects alone will use a fair amount of the money that we have budgeted, but we also have I just signed an IGA with PBOT to do some streetscape work, so we have some other infrastructure investments as well that we plan to make in the coming year. We will probably be coming back to you this fiscal year with a more in-depth strategy for Gateway. I know the mayor's been spending a lot of time thinking about Gateway, what are the right set of activities that we can be engaged in to activate that neighborhood. And then we have our Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts. The dollar amount that is that goes into these districts is quite small, and it actually some of the districts haven't performed as well as we had projected from a tax increment perspective. It validates our selection of these districts, and that these really are districts that need the most attention, and so we've supplemented the TIF with general fund dollars, with the revenue sharing dollars that flow back to the city and to the county. That money flows into this, and then PDC has also supported it with our enterprise zone business development funds. I could spend all this time talking about everything that's going on across our MPI districts, but I think you've heard different stories about what's happening in Jade or Rosewood or in Cully, and so it's very exciting work, and the money that we have is barely covers the type of work they're doing. So it's always an issue trying to cobble together funds, and we're helping them fundraise privately as well to meet their needs. Commissioner Fritz, you asked for recap on our general fund. This is the total general fund support that we receive, which you can see is split between neighborhood, the neighborhood work we do, including EOI and the traded sector work that we do. We also receive pretty much every year an allocation for our small business loan fund that provides non-TIF working capital. The ongoing is basically the same as last year with the cost of living increase. We have the Southeast Works decision package added into this mix. I wasn't sure. I think there's some conversation about VOES that's happening, so that may also be added in as another decision package. We had our two decision packages not included in the mayor's proposed budget, so we've zeroed those out here. But basically, this is a status quo general fund budget for us, and these are the kind of vital programs that we operate. So it's this represents I think an appropriate amount of support for the. It's typically general fund. It typically comes out of the second, the traded sector category. When we have projects that actually support work in our urban renewal areas, then we can, some of her time can be paid for at a TIF, but it's high percentage of it is general fund.
Right. Yeah.
And that Southeast Works is one-time money?
Yeah, it's one time. It was last year was one-time money, and so it's once again one-time money. Yeah,
we need to keep tracking that. And then VOES, how much is that?
It was 30.
It was a 30,000.
Yeah,
30.
Yeah.
Right, because I think that was another glitch. So maybe we can see how we can make that ongoing.
Yeah, I think because it was one time, that's why it probably got lost in the shuffle.
Was there a third that got lost or no?
Village Market was added.
Oh, the Village Market.
Last year, it was one time.
That was one time, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You're coming back in 2 weeks for us to adopt the budget?
Coming back 1 week for a hearing.
1 week of hearing, but yeah, in 2 weeks you vote as our budget committee on the budget. Yeah.
Yeah. Receiving.
So that's my overview of our budget. We're happy to get into any questions about any of the anything in the budget, anything in the budget document itself. And, by budget law, we present our budget the document as these separate funds. So it's really our budget, like the city's, is basically a roll-up of all these legally separate funds, and so that's what you see in the document here. Happy to make any to translate. I think you're used to seeing the URA budgets that appear in the back of the budget document, beginning at page 109. That's the, I think, what you typically see from us in terms of a URA budget with resources up top, requirements below, and the line items in that format.
And can you remind us where we are again in total staff positions? You went down from 134 in 12-13 to 93 in 14-15. Where does this end up as proposed? How many total positions?
It's a total of 95 positions, okay. 93 full-time and two.
95 is a number that we settled on, and then we just bounce around. We don't add FTE, but we might have vacancies and things like that. So I don't know that we've been at 95 filled positions, but we have 95 positions.
Right.
So you're at the new normal.
That's the new normal. That was our plan all along, and we're staying at 95 unless something magically changes, but I don't foresee that happening.
Ben, did you have a comment?
Just a minor technical clarification. You are convened as the PDC Budget Committee today to receive the budget.
Receive it.
You are not accepting it today.
Right. We're receiving it.
Thank you.
Yep.
Patrick, I have a few questions, and these are things I'd be happy to get follow-ups from you, because I think we're going to lose a quorum. We are at risk of losing a quorum in about an hour, so I want to make sure we get through the normal agenda. Number one, could I get an update on the Multnomah County Health Department headquarters?
Yep.
And the specific issue that I have is what is the timeline for some decision on that?
Okay.
Because I don't believe, since I was the sponsor of that particular budget item, that it was indefinite.
Okay.
So I understand they're on track to do something, presumably, provided they get the height. But I'd like to know what the timeline is, because, again, the council did not make this an open-ended allocation, and we did throw in the dirt. So that's number one. Number two, at what point in the process will we get an update on what's actually happening at Centennial Mills?
And I don't. We can do that anytime. So
at some point, because you mentioned there's two things happening. Could we get something a follow up just to let us know what phase are we tackling? What's happening? Because we're likely to start hearing from people just asking what's going on, and if we could get an update.
Would you like? Are you suggesting us come before council and get an update, or individually an update?
I'd settle for an email that just tells me the moving pieces, and then if we have any follow-up questions.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We've been approached about some meetings just to get some additional information, and it'd be helpful to know where we stand and where you are in your phasing and how much you're allocating to that project.
Okay.
On the two decision packages that were not funded in the mayor's proposed budget, I'd like to know a little bit more about those asks and how they fit within your overall, the new strategic plan. And again, I'd settle for something in writing.
Okay.
Whether they're funded this year or if we have the luxury of budget surplus next year, we salt them. I just want to have a better understanding of how those two asks that weren't funded fit within your overall vision for the Bureau.
Okay. Happy to do that.
And finally, if you had an extra $100,000 of general fund money for neighborhood economic development in the slide you showed us before, what would be your highest and best priority?
You're asking to get back to you on that, or you want me to answer
curious
off the cuff?
You have a bunch of very laudable things, but as between things like NPIs, loan funds, various kinds of things, I'm using this metaphorically. If you had the extra $100,000, what's your highest and best use?
I'll give you my off-the-cuff answer. I'm sure there's folks back at PDC who would have a variety of answers. We could always use more support for the NPIs, the existing NPIs, and then I think you recall that last year we received general fund money to kind of help the Lenstown Center folks, the Old Town, and the stakeholders in MLK move along an NPI path as well, because we feel like that's a model that really does work. So those are fledgling efforts that are different stages. So I would probably want to continue to support that work. I don't think we have the capacity, given both our staff but also the funding constraints, to like MPIs everywhere. But I do think we have a good sense of the universe now that we really want to be operating in, and I would love to have more support for that. So we have the 6 MPIs, the 2 main streets that we continue to operate in, Alberta and St. John's, and I would love to see the same level of activity on MLK, Lansdowne Center, and in Old Town.
That's kind of capacity building.
Yeah, have the organizational capacity. As I mentioned, when we put it into this objective 4 in our strategic plan, what we're saying is we can talk about it as business development, and I think it is business development. You can also talk about it as community development, but what it really is growing the capacity to lead whatever. The J District folks, I think, are the best example right now, just how they talk about it. Like, what we're doing here is creating the capacity to lead what's happening in our neighborhood, because everybody now wants to be in the J District. There's going to be bus rapid transit and right, people moving in. Does Pono and J District have the ability to be in the lead there? Because we think they should be in the lead, not us, not Metro, not planning. So that means capacity. That means adding staff. And so I would love to have the resources to help the Jade and all the others get to that point where we're helping them with their plans.
One final comment. You've got a ton on your plate, and it seems like we just recently had that strategic plan conversation, and now you're trying to match the budget to the plan, and you're doing so with fewer resources. So I get that you're slammed. I would request, though, that we get the proposed budget at least a week before this hearing.
Okay. That's fair.
I think we all worked diligently to go yep. through it yesterday, but it would be helpful if we had it a week before.
Yep.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments, direction?
Yeah, Ed, like Commissioner Fish, I'll rattle off a list of questions for you and answer the ones that you think you can, but at least preliminarily, quickly, and otherwise we'll hear offline. But one thing that CBO noted is that your history of spending budgeted resources varies significantly depending on category. Like over the last several years, you've spent a fairly small amount of money budgeted for business development, a greater amount, but still often much less than budgeted for property redevelopment. And then it sort of goes in a continuum to infrastructure, housing, and administration, where you spend the vast majority of what's budgeted. And CBO suggested that maybe we should look at shifting resources towards the categories where you seem better able to actually spend what's budgeted. So I'm just curious what your present sense impression reaction to that suggestion is.
So this is a dynamic that we've been tracking for years, so it's not a new dynamic. I would respectively suggest that that's kind of a misdiagnosis of the issue. I think it's the type of work that drives the timing of projects. So PBOT has a queue of projects for the next 30 years, right? So if there's money, put it together, you can move it forward. There's what happens on something like the post office or whatever. There's different variables at work, and so I've always I think we should do what we do, which is establish priorities by outcomes, by the type of work we're doing, and do our best to move those along. Every type of project, type of work, is going to move on a different timeline, and to make decisions based on which ones we can get the money out the door most quickly, I just think that's the wrong lens on it. But if the council and our board says we should be spending more on infrastructure because it's the right thing to do, then that's a different thing, right? That's an entirely legitimate way of talking about it. But the pace of investment, I think, is not the right lens to look at it, because then you would never do the big private real estate project. You'd never do them, and I don't think that's what anybody here would suggest.
It's a smaller category, but in business development, the history is of spending significantly less than 50% of what's budgeted.
It's hard money to get out because it's tax increment, so tax increment has to be spent in a very specific way that is oftentimes ill-suited to the needs of businesses. We budget, it's a pretty small amount of our budget, so if you look at the percentage it's not like we're, preventing other projects from happening, but we budget, and you budget by URA, so I have legal funds, so if I'm going to have money available, I'm going to have it across each URA so that I'm ready wherever the business opportunity comes, and it almost typically doesn't come in every URA, so that impacts it. And then some years we aren't able to use it because
because of the mismatch, I can't do a working capital loan with TIF, right? Or if I'm going to put money into a business, it's got to go into tenant improvements. Well, that may not be what a business needs at that moment, or it might be that that's a real estate investment, not a business investment. So, you know, I would have the same thing. I would say, is it appropriate amount to have? Are we missing out on any priorities as a result? But if we, you know, if we have money available for one moment, like Daimler, then I think we should keep doing and allowing it. I mean, the benefit of our people can have different views on this philosophically, but the benefit of the way that we're funded versus the way the city's funded is that I can use the money next year, right? So it's not like, and there's an end to it, as we all know. So at some point, the money is going to end. So it's not, we don't roll it over infinitely. So we have this finite period of time in which to spend the money, and if it happens this year, great. But it could happen. But the fact that we have the flexibility to do it next year, you know, I think that allows us to take on the type of work that we take on, which is different than what other bureaus take on.
There's fairly large contingency numbers in some of the URAs. Like for Central East Side, it's for 1516, it's $6.5 million. For River District, it's $14.3 million. So what happens if that contingency money isn't actually needed for budgeted projects? I mean, does it? Do you have the flexibility to spend that on other stuff without coming back to council, or does it necessarily come back to council to decide what to spend that amount on if it's not taken up?
So we used, I'll answer the first half. Tony, I'll let Tony give the official answer. Contingency is basically a fund balance. We use the term contingency not like a construction project does. We use it as, it's a term that we use, what it really represents is the fund balance. So it's the money that, the resources that we have on hand that we don't have a forecasted use for in this coming fiscal year. So it rolls over to the next year. It is available in the event that we do need to be over budget, but we have very specific constraints on our ability to move things on the fly. There's certain things would trigger us going back to our board or going back to council. So we don't have ultimate flexibility to move all that contingency back in without getting approval on it.
Right, and adding to that, some of the contingency is reserved for projects or programs that are forecast in the five-year forecast, so it's a rolling balance. And then there are contingencies in those later years, but sometimes what contributes to those contingencies are placeholders' estimates for loan payoffs or potential property sales, and so they're somewhat contingent on those.
But it may not
happening.
Exist. So right. some of the money that's in that contingency line may not actually exist. It's just that we forecast it as being paid off, as paying off this year, and if it doesn't, then it won't be there as well. But it's basically fund balance is what it is.
So, I mean, is there an argument that we should be more specific about what we think that it might be spent on, given that it's not sort of the classic construction contingency?
So if you look at our budget, I think one of the reasons why we do the forecast is that we show how the money flows through over the five-year period. So the contingency, if you look at the bottom of the contingency in any one urban renewal area, will trend towards a much smaller number by the end of the five-year period. Right. So that's what I would be worried about, is if we just had this contingency and it wasn't ever going away or declining. But the fact that we have contingency for this coming fiscal year doesn't necessarily mean that we don't have a use for it. It could be in the, it's probably in the 5-year forecast somewhere. So that's, and once again, I mean, the board and council have the ability to have a different philosophy about we do a longer look in our budgets because of the work we do. So we can, if we were just year to year and spent everything in our hands year to year, we wouldn't be able to take on long-term projects. So we do this 5-year look, and we have the benefit of forecasting out 5 years with our dollars, because it's more of a fixed revenue source as opposed to the city, which has to worry about whether revenues are going to go up or down.
Okay, so just to be clear, when you see the contingencies declining in out years, does that mean that you are assuming that the contingency left over from the previous years does get spent on specific things?
Yeah, it ties out. So the contingency number is down on the bottom of year of 1 year ends up being the fund balance starting point in the next column, and it works its way down. So it's more of an accounting mechanism than it is a true contingency like in a construction project.
So want to get anything else on the table and try to move on soon because we've got we're going to lose.
If you have other questions, Commissioner, obviously I'm happy to take them offline and we'll get you answers. So.
Well, I was just curious whether the very popular storefront improvement grants survived your strategic plan. Do we still have those?
Oh yes, absolutely. Okay. Yes, okay. They're obviously yes, they are probably our most popular program and they're an important part of the work we do in our neighbor commercial corridors. So yeah.
Okay, good.
Great stuff. Okay. Anything else that want to get on the table now? Again, direct any further requests to Patrick before the public hearing. But at that point, then I'm going to set that public hearing for May 20th at 6:30 p.m. here in Council Chambers, and then adjourn this meeting of the PDC Budget Committee until then.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Gina. We will now reconvene.
Did we
forget something?
I always forget to do this. We have invited testimony.
Oh, sorry. We did forget that. I'm going to reconvene as the Budget Committee. So, yes, we did have one person as invited testimony, I think.
Right.
All right. We'll take the invited testimony and then continue the hearing to the 20th after that. So,
is Mr. Call?
Mr. Call, yes. Come on up, yes. Please. Just Mr. Call. Welcome. Sorry, we didn't want to leave you hanging there.
Thank you. My name is Nadal Call. Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for giving me the opportunity to speak on the budget. I had the luxury of serving on the NED Leadership Group Budget Committee this last winter, and it learned a lot, and it was very productive. I also serve on the board of the Gateway Area Business Association. And with that, one of the PDC programs that began last year was another committee that was set up to focus on the streetscape and create a vision plan for the Halsey-Weidler corridor. That group decided to formalize and eventually became a formal subcommittee of GABA. And three of us are now board members of GABA. So I tell you this to give an example of the fact that we are somewhere of a crossroads in the development of Gateway. And Gateway is merely an example of the potential that we have citywide. The budget, of course, covered interstate and Lentz. I'm going to focus a little bit on Gateway because that's where my efforts have been in the last year and a half. Gateway, like many of the other business districts, is in severe need of economic development, economic growth. In my opinion, you can't achieve that without also communicating well and developing relationships with the community. And so the Halsey-Weidler Group also has many of the neighborhood association people on board. And it has been a real pleasure working with members of the PDC over the last year and a half. The effort and the resources that they've put in to our district is really an integral part of our growth. I also happen to be a property owner and a business owner on Halsey, and literally a week ago just received a DOS grant from PDC for further development of my property, and those storefront improvement grants that we've discussed, I'll be taking full advantage of that. And without those, I wouldn't be able to make the change within my own property, won't be able to open more businesses. And I've shared a lot of these conversations with other business owners and property owners in the district. And I know there was a question earlier on regarding the usage of these programs and how sometimes it looks like they're not being utilized. And, you know, I think a lot of that has a lot more to do with the property owners maybe not necessarily understanding or historically not being willing. And I feel like there's just been a lot of change in the recent year or two the open-mindedness of property owners to actually work
with City Council and the city organizations to actually help us develop our properties and our businesses and our neighborhoods. So I'm here in full support of the budget.
Well, I just want to thank you and the other property owners that you've gotten engaged. I mean, we're really at a point of takeoff in Lentz because of advocacy from the neighborhood level. So it's really essential.